Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
And welcome back to another week here at the Council of Trent podcast. I know we've had a bit of a brouhaha that has developed with my recent interviews and different topics that have been addressed that have stirred strong emotions in people. So that's why I thought it would be helpful to bring in another voice to comment on one of the particular objects of discussion that's come up recently and has been discussed even recently before my own interviews over this past weekend. That's the question of Catholic working mothers, working parents, what's good, what's bad, what's ideal, what's not ideal. When it comes to the role of women in society, women in the workplace, women in the church, I thought it was really important. We really need to have a woman's perspective on these things, because without it, if you just have a bunch of the guys sitting around talking about that stuff, well, you're missing out on some key insights. So I thought it'd be important to bring someone qualified and has an important view to share on this issue. Joanna Walland is a blogger at Pathos Catholic, and she's the author of a new book, The Catholic Working Mom's Guide to Life. So we're going to talk about that, working parents, feminism. Let's get into that and get a Catholic woman's perspective on this. I think it'll be incredibly helpful. Joanna, welcome to the Council of Trent podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure thing. So why don't you tell us a little bit about this book? I think it just came out a few months ago. And what is it, and why did you write it?
Yeah, it just was released in May of this year. I started a Facebook group for Catholic working moms in August 2014, and the book kind of grew out of that, and my experiences talking with the members of the group and hearing their stories. And I'm a huge reader, and I read a lot of Catholic books, especially Catholic books that are geared towards mothers. And I found it difficult to relate to a lot of them because they all seem to be geared more toward mothers who are at home with their kids all day. You know, there would sometimes be a few pages or even a chapter for working moms, but the rest of the book would just seem more like it was geared for the stay-at-home mom. Mm. And since there seemed to be a lack of books that were specifically for Catholic mothers who were working and earning a wage in addition to the responsibilities of their vocation as wives and mothers, I decided I should write one, and I did.
And so it seems surprising, though, because it seems like there are a fair number. I don't know the exact statistics on this, but I would say it's fairly common for Catholic mothers to work either part-time or full-time, and yet no one seems to be addressing a lot of the concerns that they're having.
Yeah, I think the current statistic right now is that 70% of all mothers, period, in the United States work in some capacity, whether in the home or outside the home.
Right.
I don't know if there's ever been a study that breaks that down for Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, my group has 6,000 members.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, there are quite a lot of us out there, as it turns out.
Okay, sure. So, and that makes sense to me. I mean, I start losing track when I think of the number of Catholic mothers who work. And even in our own household, we've been on both sides of this fence. There was a time where Laura worked full time as a nurse, and we kind of traded off watching little Matthews before Thomas got here. But now Laura stays at home and she's home full time. And then between those points, working full-time and being home full-time, she worked part-time. So we've been across kind of the gamut here. So it sounds mm-hmm. like you're at home right now. I love it. You got a little one running around in the back there.
Yes, I have. Yeah, I've run the gamut too. I worked full-time outside the home for 13 years. And hang on one second.
That is totally
actually
fine.
My little one here, her name is Laura.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
Yeah, she's the only one I have at home with me right now. The older five are at school.
Mm-hmm.
So I have six children total, and I worked full time outside the home basically the entire, from when I became a mother until just in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of forced my hand. I was laid off twice in 10 months.
Oh, wow.
So it was after the second layoff that my husband ended up getting a job that had a bigger salary than the one he'd worked at before. And it was enough that a second income wasn't immediately necessary.
Oh, okay.
So we decided I'd take a break from the workforce for a while. Part of it was to concentrate on writing the book, you know, and part of it was to address the medical needs one of our kids had.
Right.
So But anyway, but it's, you know, like everything in life, there are different seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people go through, you know, there might be some seasons where both parents want to or need to work full time. There may be a season where one parent feels called to step back and stay at home for a while, or work part time, or transition into a different role where they're working from home, or everything. It's rarely a situation where the what you're doing right now is what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life.
Right. Let's talk about an issue I think every Catholic working mother faces. I think every mother faces, frankly, and this sense of like mom guilt. The sense like I'm not being a good mom because and I feel like it's not just working. I mean, you know, I'm not homeschooling right. I'm not doing that. You know, this overwhelming sense of guilt. And that some people kind of lay it heavy on Catholic working mothers, even saying like what they're doing is intrinsically sinful, or at the very least, it's just always a very negative judgment. So what are your thoughts on advice for working mothers who feel this guilt, either coming from within or it's kind of pushed to them from the outside?
Well, I actually have an entire chapter devoted to this in my book. But in a nutshell, the most important thing any of us can do in our lives is to discern the will of God and then do that wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not easy. I mean, it's easy to be susceptible to guilt because that is one of Satan's finest weapons, in my opinion. You know, Satan likes to chip at our insecurities and even if, you know, and say, you're not doing this good enough. You should be better at this. You're a failure because you're not doing X, Y, and Z. Or now that we have social media, look at Jane's Pinterest pictures of throwing a dinosaur themed birthday party for her son. Why didn't you do that to your son, for your son? You're a failure, you know, and that kind of thing. But if you have discerned the will of God and you are confident in your discernment and you are honestly and truly working hard to do what you believe is the will of God for your life, I think that helps, because if you have that firm foundation, it's harder for Satan to chip away at it.
Right. And it's so funny you bring that up, because I think what happens a lot to us is when the devil hates something we're doing, it's funny, he doesn't, you know, sometimes he might throw a giant obstacle at us, like an illness or a tragedy to keep us from doing it. But a lot of times it's more subtle. It's just, I want you to feel like you're not good enough at this, so you'll quit it on your own, basically, and give up this thing I don't want you to be doing. So I think that's helpful. Let's look at also, I think sometimes in this discussion, it's funny when people talk about it, they say, oh, well, a working mother is always going to be neglecting her children. But I think the question of parents neglecting their children through work, that's one that equally applies to fathers and mothers, if we think about it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that is one thing that bothers me a lot about the paradigm is I've heard people say that like a father should work two or even three or even more jobs in order to allow the mother to stay at home with the kids. And that basically sends the message that the only worth a father has in the lives of his children is his ability to conceive the children and his ability to provide a paycheck. And beyond that, he's completely unnecessary. But that isn't what the church teaches. You know, the church teaches that a father is very necessary in the lives of his children, and he's supposed to be an active guide and a shepherd for them, both spiritually and physically and mentally, which how can he do that if his whole role has been reduced to conceiving children and providing a paycheck, and he's never at home otherwise?
I think that's a beautiful point to make, and I think the way I will express it best on my podcast for sensibilities is a father is more than genitals and a gross adjusted income.
I actually have a blog article where I talk about this mindset, and I'm specifically addressing Father Chad Ripperger. And it basically says Father Ripperger reduces men to a penis and a paycheck.
Right. Well, some people make this. I mean, it sounds blunt to put it that way. But when you say, I couldn't imagine that how it would be good for a family to say, it would, you know, if you have two options, either a father works 40 hours a week and a mother works 15 or 20 even at nights, and like the father watches the kids at night, for example, versus him working like 80 hours a week for me. You know, I could understand a father working 80 hours a week for the railroad back in 1908 when women can't work.
Right.
And, you know, that puts food on the table. And some men did that. But I think today, like, if a father is like, I just want that promotion, and he, you know, I get tempted with this at my own job. I could, my work, I can do it wherever I can. And there's always a temptation to want to elevate work over family, but that doesn't mean work itself is a bad thing. Well, let's go to people who will say, like, Catholic mothers, men should work, they should always work like 80, 90 hours a week if they have to, because it's sinful for Catholic mothers to work. You actually had a whole chapter about this, rebutting this idea, that didn't make it into your book, but it is on your blog,
right,
which I found interesting.
Right. Yeah, it's, well, I had to cut a lot from the book because I ended up writing about 10,000 words over my limit, because I, you know, can't stop talking, apparently.
As an author, I understand you want to get it all out there. I get it.
Yeah. So I ended up having to cut that part out because my editor and I decided that we'd focus on the saints who were working mothers instead, and to keep that chapter a little more reasonable in terms of length. But
sure.
But I, like you said, I did post that part on the blog, and I go through encyclicals. I think the earliest one I address is from 1850 with Pope Leo, and basically I go through the present day regarding the teachings of the popes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually going to edit that article to include that Council of Trent quotation that keeps floating around now.
Oh, from the Catechism of the Council of
Roman
Trent.
The Roman Catechism,
right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because that is one that I've seen more and more frequently being used to justify this belief that it's inherently sinful for mothers to work outside the home. But basically, what the church teaches and what the church has always taught is that it's not intrinsically evil for a woman to work or to earn a wage or even to work outside the home. What's evil is if she is doing it to the point that her family is neglected. And back in 1850, that would mean that there was nobody to cook the meals from scratch. There was nobody to butcher the livestock so that you had meat. There was nobody to weave cloth and then make that cloth into clothing for the family. And there, you know, and so on. When the work of keeping a family fed, clothed, and with adequate shelter basically was a full-time job in and of itself.
Right.
Because you and your spouse were doing all of the physical work that went into that.
Mm-hmm.
But today, we don't have that today. We have washing machines, we have dishwashers, we have grocery stores, we have all these labor-saving vacuum cleaners, we have all these labor-saving devices that mean the work that goes into actually keeping a family fed, clothed, and with adequate shelter is not nearly as difficult. We don't have to go out and chop firewood anymore.
Yeah.
We don't have to keep a stove, We don't have to keep shoveling coal into our cook stove, you know, every so often. And so on.
Right.
So, yeah, back in 1850, if a mother decided to get a job outside the home, her family would probably be considerably neglected if she decided to go into town and work at the local saloon all day or something.
And there weren't daycares or things like that. Children would just be left on their own. Like, they'll be fine.
You know? Right. Well, it would either be an older sibling or perhaps a grandmother or maybe an aunt.
Right.
You know, or somebody would maybe be there. But that happened anyway.
Right.
I mean, in 1850, your typical mother, middle class-ish mother, didn't sit at home doing Pinterest crafts with her kids all day. She was working. She was chopping firewood. She was weeding the garden. She was sewing clothes for the family, and she was, you know, doing 85 other tasks necessary for maintenance. And the kids just kind of trailed along behind her,
right,
as she did them. You know, she wasn't actively sitting interacting with them every minute. And a lot of times, another family member would be the one caring for the children, so the mother could get her work done. Whether an older sibling or a grandparent,
because people,
or whatever.
What they seem to say is like, well, the church has taught, you know, children need their mother, so mothers can't work because who's going to raise them? But when these encyclicals are written, it's usually someone else who kind of raised and instilled them, because the mom had to keep the house going. Like, it was a full-time job for her.
Well, it's kind of complicated because, I mean, if it's physical presence alone that constitutes raising a child. Why do we say that fathers raise their children if they're off working 40 hours a week?
Right.
I mean, we say that fathers raise their children. Mm-hmm. We don't say a father who works full time doesn't raise her children. Why do we say that a mother who works full time doesn't raise her children? If it's just proximity and quantity of time that constitutes raising, well, using that logic, fathers don't raise their children, only mothers do.
Right. It's about the quality of the time you have with the person.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, there's more that goes into raising children than just, you know, proximity and quantity.
Right.
And like my mother was a working mother. She still is a working mother. My mother is a teacher. She has been a teacher my whole life, and she's still a teacher today. I was in daycare my entire childhood until I started school. I don't even remember my child care providers. I have like very vague memories. Mm-hmm. I can't remember their names. I can't remember really doing activities with them. I do remember my mother quite clearly.
Right.
I remember my doing things with my family, and those are the memories and the impressions I have of my childhood, not the 40 hours a week I spent in daycare while my mother worked as a teacher and my father worked as a teacher as well.
Right. Let's look into then. So when we talk about working mothers and working parents, I mean, I think there are definitely two extremes. One extreme is just like saying fathers are just a paycheck and conceive the children. They should always work and mothers should always be at home on pain of like mortal sin. But I think sometimes there's another extreme that comes up where people will, they will never be critical of any situation where a mother works and a father works. Even if it ends up being detrimental to the care of the children. For example, we met a babysitter recently who watches the kids 80 hours a week. Both parents work, and they're only home when the child is sleeping. And they've done this for like 2 years. And I think it's not out of financial necessity that they have to do that. And so I think like sometimes like there's these extremes. So I guess my question from there is, how do you discern the balance to see when work is becoming an idol or when it's becoming an important thing you have discerned?
Well, first, I mean, every circumstance is different. Mm-hmm. Like if a father is military, he's going to be deployed for a year, 2 years, you know, maybe depending on how long his deployment is.
Right.
And obviously that's a situation where the father, you know, he has to be away from his family for a period of time. It's an obligation of his job,
right,
and something he has to do. So obviously, you know, in a situation like that, nobody's going to say, well, you need to be at home with your family more.
Right.
Because, you know, his literal job is to be overseas defending our country.
Right.
You know, so you always have to look at individual circumstances. And of course, financial necessity is a big one because, you know, there are some parents who have to work 80 hours a week, both of them, just to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, I would hope it's not common. I don't know what the statistics are exactly, but mm-hmm. I mean, my husband and I were in a position for quite a while. We were both working I was working full time. He was working full time and he was driving Lyft and Uber on nights and weekends
and
holidays. And we were still just barely scraping by. Mm-hmm. You know, and it wasn't for lack of hard work or lack of trying. It's just raising a family today can be difficult when you have student loan debt, when you have medical debt, you know, and when you, I mean, I didn't earn a lot after daycare, but I earned enough to pay our mortgage.
Right.
So, you know, my salary was basically what kept us from being homeless.
Mm-hmm. So I guess like the question is, yeah, how do you balance, like, because I think that goes back to the original question of guilt. It's like, one, what should I be doing? And then as a more practical level, like knowing I'm going to work, that I think the principle we're running on is what I'm doing overall for the benefit of my family, or is it more just for the benefit of me and everything else can kind of fall by the wayside? And if it is for the benefit of family, what are the practical tips to like kind of trudge through that, you know?
Yeah. Well, what I would say is make sure the time you have at home is quality time. I mean, if like the situation you brought up before, where both parents are working 80 hours a week and they're only home when the kids are asleep, I would say that is something that has to be reevaluated ASAP, because that's not fair to the kids to never see their parents. It's one thing if it's a situation where there's financial necessity, or it's a, say both parents are doctors and there's a horrible flu outbreak, and they're both working 80 hours a week to help stem the tide of this horrible flu outbreak.
Right.
You know, that's a short-term situation that, you know, might be able to be done for a little while, as long as the need exists. But if it's a indefinite thing, that kind of ignores the need of the child to spend that quality time with the parents, because, you know, it's not quantity of time that goes into, but there has to be time.
Right. Yes.
It can't just be, you know, I'm just going to treat my child as an ornament that's there for me to play with when I feel like, and otherwise I'm going to go off and do my own thing. That isn't parenting.
Right.
That's having a plaything.
Right.
And, or a pet, and children are neither of those. Mm-hmm.
So then, I guess the follow-up then is, if you have that correct mindset, but it feels like, you know, I think a lot of parents, we feel like everybody's running at us with something they need. The kid needs this cleaned up. The government needs this tax bill paid. The car dealership needs this. Like, everybody needs all this stuff from me, and you feel like you're crushed almost by it. Like, how would you encourage people who are, I mean, obviously you can't solve their problems, but they might feel like despaired in this, like they're still trying to find a way through it.
Yeah. Well, first, I mean, prayer is essential.
Right.
Always. Keeping that line of communication with God open. And even if it's just, I mean, I used to cry on my way to work in the morning. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I didn't want to go. And it was basically me in the car crying out to God and saying, how long do I have to do this? Mm-hmm. Why do I have to do this? Why can't we just make enough money so I don't have to work every day? And it took him years, you know, over a decade to answer that prayer. Mm. And, but I think it was good that even though my prayer was basically just me sobbing about how unhappy I was still making the effort to pray about it. Mm. And I was asking God to give me strength to keep on going if it was his will that I keep working, which it turned out it was for quite a while. So definitely keep lines of prayer open. Practically, just prioritize. Mm. I mean, it's hard when it seems like everything's equally important, but, you know...
Paying the bills is different than going to that birthday party on Saturday.
Right. And if, you know, there might be a season where you need to completely cut out all extracurriculars for your kids, mm-hmm. whether because you can't afford to do them or because you're just exhausted from, you know, being a shuttle bus half the day after doing a full day of work, you know, and that can be a tough thing for kids to understand, but it's better than you having a complete breakdown one day because it's just too much.
There was a plot to do you remember the old Berenstain Bears books?
Yes.
There was a plot of one of those, the Berenstain Bears, where the mama bear takes the kids. I remember this as a kid. I remember reading this, and she takes them to football and ballet and like four different things. And at the end mm-hmm. of the book, she breaks down and cries in the car, and they don't drive anywhere because it's too much. And then the Saturday, they don't do anything, and they just spent the day together doing that. I would recommend, there's a great book I've been reading recently called Essentialism by Greg McKeown, McKeown. The book is Essentialism, the Disciplined Pursuit of Less. So if, you know, especially if you're a working mother and you're a house, you feel like you're juggling a lot, sometimes learning the art of saying no to things gives you so much more freedom to say yes to things that matter most.
Right.
Let's close it out here. One more question to get your thoughts on. So, you know, working mothers is not very, well, working mothers outside the home was not as common throughout most of modern history. Women entering the workforce was more common in kind of second wave feminism. So some people look at this question through a lens of, oh, well, you know, this is about feminism and, you know, women don't want to be at home and feminism's evil. You know, how can we be a part of this? What will your take be on that question of how Catholics should look at feminism, working mothers, and that lens that kind of comes up?
Well, I would say that Catholics should be feminists. If you're not, you're not living out your Catholic faith. In Evangelium Vitae, St. John Paul II said, in transforming culture so that it supports life, women occupy a place in thought and action which is unique and decisive. It depends on them to promote a new feminism which rejects the temptation of imitating models of male domination in order to acknowledge and affirm the true genius of women in every aspect of the life of society and overcome all discrimination, violence, and exploitation. So, I mean, as Catholics, we should absolutely be opposed to discrimination, violence, and exploitation. We should want to promote a feminism that rejects this paradigm in the workforce that the wombless male body is what is normative and regular, which can lead to women facing pregnancy discrimination and getting fired simply because they were pregnant or went on maternity leave.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because how can we tell single mothers to choose life and then say, well, but if you do choose life, you're not going to be able to get a job because nobody wants to hire a pregnant woman. We can't tell single mothers you should just stay at home. Because how are they going to support their family?
Right. They've been abandoned already.
You know?
Yeah.
Right. So if you're Catholic, you should be feminist. You should support the equality of men and women in terms of their human dignity as persons. So, that's what the authentic feminism boils down to.
So not like a inauthentic or corrupted feminism that says, you know, oh, we have to erase the differences between men and women, or men are evil and they're the threat to women. Rather, what Pope St. John Paul II said in paragraph 99 of Evangelium Vitae, promote a new feminism which doesn't imitate male domination models, but it overcomes all discrimination, violence, and exploitation. Sounds sensible to me.
Exactly. One excellent resource in this regard is the Femme Catholic Community. That's at www.femcatholic.com. Its founder is Samantha Pavlock, and I feature her in chapter 4 of my book. And her site is terrific. It's 100% in line with church teaching. And it's a terrific jumping off point for conversations regarding Catholic feminism.
Mm-hmm. Well, perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Joanna, share this wisdom. I think it'll be very helpful. If you go to trendhornpodcast.com, we'll include a link to Joanna's book, The Catholic Working Mom's Guide to Life. You can go and check out a copy there. Thank you so much. And if you have any other thoughts to share, the floor is yours.
Oh, wow. Well, basically, I just want to tell mothers, working mothers, you know, all Catholic women that, you know, like I was saying before, the most important thing you can do in your life is to discern the will of God and then do your utmost to fulfill that will. That is the most important thing for any of us to do. So don't think that it's impossible that the will of God might be for you to work outside the home for a season, or that it might be for you to stay at home for a season, or, you know, make any sort of transition in your life. Just, you know, pray novenas, pray for guidance, pray for wisdom, and just do your best to fulfill the will of God in your life.
Well, I like that. I wholeheartedly agree. Thank you so much for stopping by. And tell little Laura there that I said hi. I'm glad she was hanging out in the background with us. It makes me want to get home and see my kiddos and my Laura soon. So thank you so much for stopping by, Joanna.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you all so much. Go to trendhornpodcast.com. Check out the resources we mentioned. And I hope you all have a very blessed day.
If you liked today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trendhornpodcast.com.